This morning's scripture is going to be taken from the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 4 through 19. That is Proverbs chapter 4, verses 4 through 19. And it reads as follows. He also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands, and live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all your getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace. A crown of glory she will deliver to you. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your step will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is like the shining sun, that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble.
Well, we have a good number present with us today, and we're glad you're here. For those of you that are visiting, we're especially grateful for your being here. If you're visiting from the community, we hope you'll want to come back and be with us often. And I hope we put forth a welcome to you that you'll want to do that. I know there are others that are not from the community. Hannah's grandparents are here this morning, and we're glad to have all of you with us. One announcement that I'll make, and I'll get right into the lesson. We have with us this morning, and many of you have probably met him already, but I hope I pronounce his name right. If not, I'll get the correct pronunciation. But Ekong Albert. Is with us. He's from East Orange, and he's a member of the church, has moved into the community, and is placing membership with us this morning. So he's going to be worshiping here with us at East Orange. With us today, sitting about halfway back, if you've not had an opportunity, get to know him, meet him, and welcome him to the congregation. And we look forward, Ekong, to having you with us here at East Orange. This morning, as Ed said, and I appreciate him leading the song, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning. I've been doing this every couple of months, taking one of the older songs in particular that might have terms or ideas within it that because they are older, some of the language is not used so often. Some of the ideas in the songs perhaps are long past and, gone into the past. This is one of them. With today's communication and everything, this is not something that we readily think about or an idea that's so prevalent. And yet we sing these songs, and when we sing, we need to have the meaning, we need to understand the words, we need to learn the lessons. That's the purpose of singing, teaching and admonishing one another, etc. So I choose these songs and just kind of take a look at them. This one has really a magnificent picture within it, a beautiful picture within it. It's a simple song. It's a well-known song, but it is one, as I said, with a beautiful allusion within it. Let the lower lights be burning. Philip Bliss, a well-known author, as you can see from what I put up above us, was an associate of Dwight L. Moody. D.L. Moody was a well-known, very well-known evangelist in the 1800s. Would have been like if I throw the name out, Billy Graham. Everybody knows Billy Graham, regardless of what denomination or religion you're of, you know Billy Graham. Well, D.L. Moody was every bit as popular as Billy Graham, if not more so, even around the world. So that tells you the idea of Dwight L. Moody. But Philip Bliss was an associate of his among a number of different evangelists, songwriters, etc. He always had usually a very talented singer-songwriter as Bliss. Ira Sankey, that is in our book as well, wrote several of our songs. But he always had one of those with him. And you can see from this list, he wrote Almost Persuaded, Hallelujah, What a Savior, Wonderful Words of Life. He wrote the melodies, as you can see, For It Is Well With My Soul, and I Gave My Life for Thee. He wrote the lyrics, For I Will Sing of My Redeemer. And that's not all of even the songs that are in our book. I just chose some of the more well-known, more popular songs. Now, oh, and that's Philip Bliss. I thought you might like to see him. This is from a well-known print of from the 1800s. Let the Lower Lights Be Burning was written by Bliss while he was working with D.L. Moody. And 50 years later, it was included in a book, a song book that members of the church popularly purchase and use, Great Songs of the Church, number one. And you can see it was published in 1921. Since that time, as I said, song written in the 1870s and the 1920s was put in the book. Since that time, it has grown in popularity and become really a standard among members of the church. The song was inspired by a story, and I'm going to put it that way, a story that was told by Moody. There's a lot of controversy that surrounds the story, and I'm not really interested in that this morning. Some would say the story, Moody reported this as something that he knew, was aware of, that had happened. I don't know if it happened or it didn't. Some say he made the story up. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other, and you'll see why in just a moment. But Moody told the story, and it made such an impression on Bliss that Bliss wrote this beautiful song, Let the Lower Lights Be Burning. Now, here is the story. Moody said, on a dark, stormy night, and I'm quoting Moody here, on a dark, stormy night, when the waves rolled like mountains, and not a star even was to be seen in the sky, a boat rocking and plunging near the Cleveland Harbor. The conversation took place between the pilot and the lighthouse keeper. So if you can picture that in your mind, he's yelling back and forth to the lighthouse keeper. Are you sure this is Cleveland? Asked the captain, seeing only one light from the lighthouse. Now, you've seen lighthouses, I'm sure. Big, tall tower. At the top, there's this great light. You can see it for miles around. Are you sure this is Cleveland? Asked the captain, seeing only one light from the lighthouse. Quite sure, replied the pilot. Where are the lower lights? Where are the lower lights? Gone out, sir. Can you make the harbor? We must, or perish, sir. And with a strong hand and a brave heart, the old pilot turned the wheel. Now, if you can imagine, 1800s, these great big wheels, you've seen them, look like a wagon wheel with spokes sticking out. For these ships or these boats on the sea. He said that with a brave hand and a strong heart, the old pilot turned the wheel. But alas, in the darkness, he missed the channel. And with a crash upon the rocks, the boat was shivered. Many a life was lost in a watery grave. Moody concluded by saying this, and this was the part that got Bliss. Brethren, the master will take care of the great lighthouse. Let us keep the lower lights burning. Now, chances are, if you've not taken time to look up what that really means, then like I was for a long time, many years, you sing the song, and perhaps you get an idea of what the song is saying, but it really doesn't make a lot of sense, because we don't live in the time when lighthouses and the light from the lighthouse and even the lesser known lower lights mean a lot. If you're, you know, very familiar with shipping and all of that, maybe it does, but not usually. So what in the world does it mean? The master will take care of the great lighthouse, Moody said, let us keep the lower lights burning. The lower lights are, in fact, separate lights from the lighthouse. We've all seen a lighthouse, and I've visited them. Perhaps you have as well. We see this great tower. We know there's a light at the top, etc. But the lower lights are separate lights from the lighthouse. They, in fact, light the shoreline. So if you can picture this, you're coming in from the sea. There are lights along the shoreline that light it up. And then there's the great lighthouse that you can see from a much greater distance. They're the various lights that allow ships to come into the harbor at night. And depending on how dark it is. Now, if it's a bright moonlit night, if you've ever been out on a boat fishing or whatever, and I have many times, it'll light up the whole area. I mean, you can see, and, you know, the moonlight especially is enough to see by. You can even read sometimes by a bright moon. But if it's dark, I mean, if there's no moonlight, if clouds obscure the moon, you can, and remember Moody said this was a night you couldn't see any stars or anything, then it's dark. And without street lamps and all of that kind of thing, it's hard to imagine around here. But you go down south and you can see places like this, it can get pitch black dark. And even when your eyes adjust, you can hardly see. So he says there are various lights are the idea here. Moody was talking about the lower lights. And these are the various lights that allow these ships to come into the harbor at night. And especially if you have a narrow channel that's leading into the mouth of the harbor. Let me give you an idea. Here's what a painting, I hope you can see this well, but this is a painting that really demonstrates very well the lights, except if you'll notice up at the top, there is a bright moon here, and you can see the moon shining on the water. I couldn't find one that didn't have the moon shining bright, so it's the best I could do. But it illustrates the point. Notice the lighthouse at the top of the mountain there. The great light at the very top of the lighthouse, shining brightly out at a great view. You can see it all the way to the horizon, and that's the way they make them. Notice along the bottom of that mountain there, all those little lights right at the shoreline. That's to tell the ship where the shoreline is. The captain of the ship knows if he gets too close, he crashes on those rocks. If those lights are out, and there are no lights or anything to light that up, think about it. You never know if that's a sheer drop off, if it slopes way out. You don't know how close you are. You can't tell by the lighthouse, because if you'll notice, and I chose this picture for this, notice how the light shoots straight out from the lighthouse. It really doesn't light below. And that's the whole point of the lower lights. So if you can imagine this, pitch black dark, except for the lighthouse, all the lights on the shore, as the guy had said, they've gone out, sir. And he says, can you make it? Remember, it was a great storm. He had to get the ship in, or the storm itself was going to overturn the boat. And he said, we've got to, or we perish. So he took a chance. He pushed the boat in, and he crashed it against the rocks of the shore. And that's the idea in the song. Now, some say this never happened, that Moody made it up. I don't know, one way or the other. There is a shipwreck or two on the Great Lakes, and it is possible that it was a true story, very possible it was a true story. He just got it wrong that it wasn't the Cleveland Harbor. It doesn't matter. The illustration is the same. Now, let's talk about it a little bit. Brightly beams our Father's mercy from His lighthouse evermore, but to us He gives the keeping of the lights along the shore. Obviously, when we're talking about God, we're talking about God who is rich in mercy. We speak of a God who has great mercy. Ephesians 2:4, rich in mercy. We also know that God is the light, the great light. There are many passages, and I chose several here just to take a look at, but there are many passages that show us God is the light. If we walk in the light as He is in the light, 1 John 1. We know God is in the light. I want to choose a couple, though. One is from Zechariah's great prophecy, or his statement speech about Jesus. Look at Luke chapter 1. And it's often called Zechariah's prophecy here. But I want you to look down at something that is said in Luke 1 and down in verse 76. When he says, "And thou, child, shall be called the prophet of the highest." And, of course, obviously, we're talking about the birth of both John the Baptist and Jesus here. Thou, child, shalt be called the prophet of the highest, for thou shalt go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation unto his people by the remission of their sins. It's a beautiful statement. And the idea here in this passage is that John was going to grow up, and he was going to prepare the way of the Lord. But if you notice the way that he says it here, that you're going to go before the face of the Lord to prepare his ways, to give knowledge of salvation unto his people. Now notice verse 78, through the tender mercy of our God, whereby the day spring from on high, who has visited us, to give light to them that sit in darkness. And that speaks of Jesus. The idea of Jesus when he came into the world, and Jesus even says that of himself, and the writers say it of him, he was the great light of God coming into the world. We were taking the Lord's Supper a moment ago, and Wes was talking about the fact that Jesus gave up so much, and that's true. He emptied himself, Philippians 2, as Wes quoted. He gave up so much, but he did that to come into the world and bring light and salvation to us. Think about the statements that are made. Turn a few pages over to John chapter 1. John is filled with passages, and I only chose a couple of them. But John is filled with passages that talk about Jesus, the great light of the world. Look at John chapter 1 and verse 4. This says, in him, speaking of Christ, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. Notice in verse 9 when it says that, speaking of Jesus, or he, was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Now, that's a profound statement, and I'm not going to get off on talking about it, but there is a whole lot to that statement. But he's the true light that lights every man that comes into the world. You think about a number of statements that are made by Jesus, like John 9 and verse 5, as long as I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world. Let me read chapter 8, though, in verse 12. When he said to the people around him, I am the light of the world. He that follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Now again, it's hard to imagine when you walk out of your house at night, everything's lit up around here. You can't, and I thought about this since I moved up here. And I moved up here from Alabama, and I've been out in the countryside of Alabama. You know, and several of you can relate to this, and you can get places there in Tennessee and so forth. You can turn the lights out on your car, and it's dark, you know. But here, one of the things that strikes me is you can't find any place that's dark. I've driven around at night sometimes and thought to myself, how far, and I know I would have to drive south or west, you know, would be the closest direction, maybe north. But you have to drive a little ways just to get to darkness. It's hard to imagine the idea of being in real darkness unless you've gone and experienced that. But the idea here was, and in this day and time, it was very real. And so Jesus says, I am the light of the world. If you follow me, you'll never walk in darkness. You'll always have the light. Think about something else that's said here. In chapter 12, and this is an interesting statement that he makes. Turn to chapter 12 and look at verse 46. Now, several times in chapter 12, he talks about being the light. But especially this statement, when he says in verse 46, I am come a light into the world, that whosoever believes on me shall not abide or remain in darkness. And I think that's the point. If we walk in the light as he is in the light, if we have Jesus, we have light. Now, all of that's true, and we're going to accept that as a fact. I think all of us as Christians, we believe that. Brightly beams our Father's mercy. We know that he has great mercy, and we know that he lights the world up, so to speak, with his mercy. But the song isn't talking about that. A lot of songs do. One of the reasons I like this song in particular is there are so many songs out there, beautiful ones, that make that allusion to the lighthouse or the sun getting to the light. The great light. This is the only one, or certainly one of few. I can't think of another. Maybe there is one. But the only one I'm aware of that really doesn't talk about the lighthouse so much as it does the lower lights and the importance of them. To us, he gives the keeping of the lights along the shore, the lower lights. Turn back with me to Matthew 5, and let's remind ourselves of some things that Jesus also said. Yes, he said many times, he was the light of the world. If you come to him and you stay with him, you'll always have light. You'll never stay or remain in darkness. You'll always have light. And yet in Matthew 5, remember, Jesus also said, verse 14, you, Christians, you, disciples, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle or a lamp and put it under a bushel. When you light a light, you want it to be seen. You don't hide it or obscure it. It doesn't do any good if you do that. We all are aware of that. But you put it on a candlestick or a lampstand, many translations say. And it gives light unto all that are in the house. And that's the idea. You are the light. You're the light of the world. Notice, Jesus is the light of the world, but so are you. And it takes both. You think about that illusion that Moody was telling. The lighthouse was there, and it was working. The lighthouse didn't go out. It's just like the world today. Jesus doesn't go out. All right? Jesus is always lighting the world. But if you don't have the lower lights, Ed led a song, and it really fits well. I appreciate him choosing this because it really fits well with this idea in the sermon and the lesson. The idea of the world many times only looks at us. We're the only gospel that it will sometimes read. It's not that the Bible is useless, and it's not that they couldn't take the Bible and read it and understand the truth. We know that, but they won't. They're going to look at you. If they're not the lower lights, they're going to crash. But even though the lighthouse is there, they're not going to get to the lighthouse without us. That's why Jesus said, you're the light of the world. Notice verse 16. Let your light so shine. In other words, brightly, openly, so people can see it. Let it so shine before men that they may see your good works and then glorify your Father who is in heaven. In Luke chapter 11 and verse 33, and I'll just read a couple more verses, and I'll spend more time on verse 1. It's the thrust of the song, and I will the other two. But look at Luke 11 and verse 33. When Jesus said it simply like this, no man, when he has lighted a candle, puts it in a secret place, neither under a bushel, but on a candlestick, that they which come in may see the light. Now, I choose this verse for one point in it. It's all very similar to Matthew 5, except for one thing Jesus says on this occasion. Notice when he says, no man lights a candle and puts it in a secret place. Some of your translations may read cellar. The word in the original is literally crypt. And I like that. I wish it were translated crypt, in translations, because that's exactly the idea. A crypt is like, you can think of like a casket, a place where you bury someone. All too often, with members of the church, they have the light, but they bury it. They bury it perhaps because they're afraid of what other people will think. They bury it perhaps because they're afraid of what people might say. They bury it because they're not sure people want the light. And you know, the truth is, most people don't. But some do. And if your light is buried, if it's in a crypt, a cellar, a secret place, it's hidden. If it is, then the one person who wants it, they may not show you they want it. They may not be open about the fact they want it. But secretly themselves, they may really want to see the light. And if you don't shine, they don't see it from you. And perhaps they never see it from anyone else. Jesus makes this point here. If your light is in a crypt, if it's buried, then people can't see it. And thus they can't come to the Father. Another passage, and I want to turn back to this passage in Proverbs 4, and I'm not going to reread it. Percy read that for us, but turn back with me and let's pick up one point that Solomon said here. Back and forth. But Proverbs chapter 4 here. Look down in this passage that begins in verse 14 when he says, enter not into the path of the wicked. Verse 15, avoid it. Notice down, if you will, in verse 18. Pick up reading there with me. The path of the just, my translation says, is as a shining light. I think Percy said a sun. The point is, it's a great light. the path of the just that shines more and more, notice, unto a perfect day, as opposed to the way of the wicked being like darkness. They know not at what they stumble. But look at that in verse 18. The path of the just is as a shining light that shines more and more. That should be the life of a Christian. It should be the life of, if you will, a lower light. Always there, always shining, always able to guide the poor, fainting, struggling seamen, as we're going to see, in safely to the shore. Let's go further with this idea. Dark the night of sin is settled. Loud the angry billows roar. Eager eyes are watching, longing for the lights, the lower lights, along the shore. The angry billows can represent anything. And I started to put up a host of verses to show that. And I thought, you know what, that's simple. We all understand that. It can represent anything that threatens you, that causes you to be in trouble. If you think about a ship out on a sea, when there's the angry billows are the waves, the great waves that whip up with the wind and all of that, that can capsize a boat, that can fill it full of water, et cetera, causes it to crash. Even today, you know, if you've been reading about some of the, you know, as these ships sail literally all over the world frequently now, they're hitting out in the deep waters of the Pacific, the Atlantic especially, they're hitting these gigantic waves. When I was a kid and watched Poseidon Adventure, you know, you thought, boy, that's, you know, wow, 100-foot wave. Well, you know, there really are waves like that. I mean, sometimes we think, you know, Hollywood just made a movie like that, but no. And within the last really relatively few years, in a short amount of time, two huge ships were lost to waves just like on the Poseidon Adventure. The point is, they're angry billows that threaten us. No matter how secure we feel, we may be in some luxury liner or whatever, we may think we're in a ship that can't be turned over. There's a wave out there that can hit us and capsize us. It's anything that threatens us. And the point is, when you're out there in the world and you're facing the storm, you need someone to guide you to safety. I think about the eunuch. That's why I put Acts 8:31 here. Philip ran up to the eunuch and said, "Do you understand what you read?" And the eunuch responded in verse 31. He said, "How can I except someone or some man guide me?" People need others to guide them. I know that was true of me. I had Bibles around all my life. I mean, I don't ever remember it. There never was a time when there wasn't a Bible around. But you know, I didn't pick it up. I mean, I did sometimes, but it just, I didn't learn from it. I didn't see the Lord's truth within it. I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. And in fact, I reached a point in my life where I closed it up and said, "I'm through with it." You know? But yet, Jeff came along, and his father Dale came along, and they guided me. And they helped me to see the light. And that's what people need. They need someone to guide them. Like the eunuch said, Christians are the guides. They're the lights along the shore. They're not the lighthouse, but they're the lights along the shore. And Jesus equates them with being the light of the world. That's the emphasis the Lord places. I want you to look with me at Philippians 2, a passage that I think has been abused often, not necessarily here, but by some in the world. Totally wrong idea is popularly talked about from this passage, but let's look at what it really says. "My beloved brethren," he says, "wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed," verse 12, "not as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." One of the abuses, obviously, is, no, you decide how you want to be saved. We know that's ludicrous. But it also goes on to say in verse 13, "It is God who works in you." Now this begins to place a great responsibility on us as Christians. God works in us, both to will and to do of His good pleasure. Notice God works in us and through us. So important then, verse 14, to do all things without murmurings or complainings and disputings, fightings and so forth that go on. Nothing turns people off quicker to religion than Christians grumbling, complaining, and fighting between themselves. "That you may be," verse 15, now notice this, that you may be blameless and harmless, is the idea. The sons of God, without rebuke, from where would be the idea? And the idea is from those without. Without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, notice, among whom you shine as lights in the world. And the truth is, only if you're different. Only if you're living differently. If you're doing all the murmuring and disputing and all of that kind of thing, you're not, and so there's no light there. There's nothing to make you stand out. There's only the shoreline, and it looks like everything else, and people crash. But if you're shining as a light in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, people see that, and you shine as a light in the world. Now notice verse 16, holding forth the word of life. I've heard this used by those, you know, talking about witnessing and all of that kind of thing, to talk about going out to people and holding forth the Bible. And that's the idea, for example, knocking on somebody's door with a Bible like this, if not literally, figuratively, a Bible like this and saying, "Are you saved? And let me show you the way." That's not what this passage is saying. It's not that that idea is not in the Bible of taking the truth to others and giving, but it's not what this passage is saying. Some of your translations may say something in verse 16 like holding before the word of life. What does that mean? It means this. It means you're out there with a Bible in front, not of their face, but yours. You're holding it before you. You're looking at it. You're reading it. You understand the truth of it. You're holding it and you're reflecting the light that is in this. Think of it like this. You're a mirror. The light shines from the Bible to you and out to the world. Or it doesn't. And what this passage is teaching us is, you shine as a light in the world because you hold before you the word of life. And people see it. It's a great responsibility. Go back with me to one other passage in Luke chapter 8. I won't spend long here. Jesus is very simple here, but yet profound. Look at Luke 8, and this is the parable of the sower. We often quit at verse 15, but I'm not. I'm going to read the next verse with it. When Jesus was explaining the parable of the sower, and he talked about the good ground, this is what he said in Luke's account, Luke 8, verse 15. He said, "On the good ground is those," and he says, "that on the good ground are they which in a good and honest," or an honest and good heart, "having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience," or endurance. Now notice verse 16. "No man, when he has lighted a candle," what would that be? That's when you become a Christian, a good and honest heart takes the truth within you, you keep it, and you bring forth fruit. "No man, when he's lighted a candle, covers it with a vessel, or puts it under a bed, but sets it on a candlestick, that they which enter in may see the light." This is at least the third occasion, and you can go through the Gospels and see this, this is at least the third occasion when Jesus used that analogy. The Sermon on the Mount, the one we read in Luke 11, and here in Luke 8. And in fact, there are others as well. This was apparently a popular saying of Jesus, a common saying of Jesus. It was to get a point across. When you as a Christian take the word into your heart and live it and bring forth fruit, you're like a light. Not a hidden one, but a light that is shining. Christians are lights along the shoreline. Let's go through verse 3 quickly, but a great point. Trim your feeble lamp, my brother, some poor sailor, tempest-tossed, trying now to reach the harbor or make the harbor in the darkness may be lost. What does it mean to trim your lamp? When I was growing up, my grandmother always had what we called oil lamps. Some people call them hurricane lamps. You may or may not have them. Electricity goes out and they're still useful. A hurricane lamp or an oil lamp, you know, is one of those lamps that has oil in the bottom of it. And you have that wick, and usually a little thing you turn, it raises the wick. It's got kerosene or lamp oil that you buy at Walmart or wherever. It smells. And you stick a match to it, and it lights up. You put a globe on top of it. It's not great light, but in the old days, it's what they had. And in fact, it can give some light. And if your electricity is out, it's a good little substitute. In some ways, it's superior, obviously, to a candle. It gives more light than a candle does. Trimming a lamp requires that you take that wick, that part of the cloth or linen or whatever it is that you usually roll up with that little wheel. You take it when it is blackened, when it's dirty. And if you'll notice, if you just keep, and when I was a kid, I always had one of these around. I played with it. And when it gets dirty, and it's, you know, it's blackened and so forth, when you light it, it puts out a real black smoke. Immediately, it dirties up the inside of the globe. You can't hardly see the light. There's only a faint glow of a light. But if you'll clean the globe and trim off that dirty part so you have that bright white wick and light it, the smoke will be rather clear and the light will really shine. And that's the idea of trimming your lamp. Another idea of trimming the lamp is when the oil goes out, you got no fuel, so you got to put more oil in. Now, Jesus used that analogy, obviously, in Matthew 25. And I'm not going to look at the parable of the 10 virgins. I'm sure you know it. There was no oil for their lamps. They hadn't trimmed their lamps in that sense. But it's both ideas. Now, notice the point in the song. Trim your feeble lamp. The idea of feeble here is little, small. When the wick is dirty, the globe is dirty, it doesn't give off much light. And that's the point. So trim it. Trim your feeble lamp, my brother, because there's a guy in trouble trying to see your light, and his life depends on it. Always ready to give people. I want you to look at 1 Peter 3. I asked you in your questions on the bulletin this morning, exactly what are people asking for in 1 Peter 3. I want you to look at this verse with me. Sanctify the Lord God or Lord Christ in your hearts and be ready always to give an answer, usually where most of us stop quoting. But that's not what it says. Ready to give an answer, a defense, an apologetic, some of you might say. But to every man that asks you, but notice what they're asking for. They're asking for a reason. Sometimes we stop there and we say you got to not only give people what the Bible says, but you got to show them why. Show them book, chapter, and verse. That's not what it's asking for either. There's something you have that they don't. And what you have as a Christian is hope. The world is filled with hopelessness. I don't know if any of you saw yesterday, but floating, if you get your news off the internet, which is the way I generally get it, because you can get it any time, day or night, front page, Comcast, or any of your pages will come up with news on it. And the thing circulating around yesterday was famous last words of celebrities. The last thing people called for. You know, like Joan Crawford. Her maid or whatever started praying to God and she said, last words, don't you dare go to God about me. And she died. People are without hope. They're hopeless. You know, you look at those things yesterday, those celebrities, those last words, and you think about yourself dying, what would you say? I hope, and I picture myself praying the moment I die. Because that's where my confidence is, and that's where my belief is. I want to be praying. I want to be asking for forgiveness when I die. I want to be asking God to be with me when I die. I want to be doing that, not saying perhaps like Humphrey Bogart, man, I shouldn't have switched to martinis, you know. I don't want that to be the last thought on my mind when I die. People are without hope in this world. Look at verse 15. They're asking you for the reason of the hope you have. And that's exactly the idea here. They're trying to reach the harbor because there's hope if they know how to get there. And that's what they're looking for. The chorus says, let the lower lights be burning. Send a gleam across the way. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman. You may rescue, you may save. Interestingly enough, all the light people in trouble, like the song Ed Lid, all the light they'll ever see is from a Christian. If we let it go out, what becomes of the person in trouble? And perhaps the only Christian they know is me.
A gleam is not a bright light. It's a small bright light. It's not the great light of the lighthouse that can be seen all the way to the horizon. It really only can be seen as you near the harbor. But you know, we use the term in poetry. We use it, for example, like a gleam of hope. It means just a little light, a little hope. You know, really, that's all people are looking for. Sometimes you may think you have nothing to offer somebody. You may think you're not the greatest Christian in the world. You're not the most faithful, etc., etc. It'd really just be better if they didn't know who you were or what you are. But that person out there in the world is lost. He's looking for anything. And if he's good and he's honest and he just doesn't know, he's looking for your little light. And you're the one that's there. It doesn't help to have bright lights along another harbor, because they're not there. They're in your harbor. And the point is, do they see your light? The lights along the shore. Notice how little those lights are. But you're near them, and they're so important. Because if you don't see them, you crash. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, if you would obey the gospel today, believe in Jesus Christ, confess your belief, be willing to change your life and be baptized, your sins will be forgiven and be washed away. Maybe you're here and you've done that, and you look at your life and you say, my life's not what it needs to be. Trim your lamp. Put whatever it is behind you, clean up your globe so people can see your life. Won't you please come while Ed leads us in this song?